Hey, everybody, if you're listening to this, you're listening on the free feed. Go sign up at the Patreon at subbeacon.com. You'll easily find us. You really should sign up, though, because, all right, so this is the Barbie episode. We talked Barbie. But the best part of this episode was the bonus episode. We did a draft of Mattel Cinematic Universe movies. We're going to have a Mattel Cinematic Universe, folks, whether you like it or not. So we came up with some great ideas and some great pitches. Frankly, if you're a studio executive, you need to be listening to this episode to figure out what to do with your lineup of Mattel intellectual property, folks. I mean, we got movies for Uno. We got movies for Magic 8 Balls. We got movies for He-Man. All sorts of good stuff. So go check that out, subbeacon.com, you listen to this, and we'll be back next week with another episode.
My heart breaks.
Some things have been happening that might be related.
When my world shakes.
Cold shower.
Ooh.
Falling off my roof.
Ah!
And my heels are on the ground.
Flat feet!
Welcome to the Subbeacon Podcast. I'm your co-host, Mike Warren. I am joined, as always, by my two co-hosts, who are Barbie girls living in a Barbie world, Sunny Bunch and Jonathan V. Last. Join us at subbeacon.com. You become a patron there. Sign up. Get exclusive access to bonus episodes. You can hear our episodes initially when they are first released on that week. You don't have to wait for the free feed. You can join the conversation. Come be a part of us. Subbeacon.com. We're going to be talking about Barbie later in the show. But first, let's hear how everyone is doing. Sunny, we've got to have an update on what went on in your house. You seem to be, you're not sweating. You don't have, fans and ice at your feet.
It's still very hot here in Dallas. Right? It's going to be 106 today. It's been 106 for like three straight days. This is a scorcher. It's a scorcher, this.
But you can't play God.
I can't be the master of domain. And my domain is back under my control.
There we go.
I sent you guys a picture. I'll include it. But you'll notice if you look at the utility closet now, there you can access the HVAC. And fun fact, once you can access the HVAC, the repair on the HVAC system took approximately 45 minutes. So 4 days of limited to no air conditioning for a 45-minute repair because I couldn't get in there because there was a giant tanked water heater in the way. So we had a second plumber come out, I think after I talked to you guys. And he was like, look, I don't know what the last guys told you, but your best bet here is really to do a tankless water heater because you don't, that way you won't have to run anymore. We won't have to repipe. You're not going to have to run, gas under your bedrooms, blah, blah. And he was like, it'll fit right here.
Right.
It'll be slightly tight, but I mean, you should have a solid 24 inches. That should be, okay. And I was like doing some measurements and I was like, it's still real tight. And he's like, look, you take off this cover, then it's like 30 inches. I was like, okay, well, I guess that works. So it is still a little tight in there, but it just goes on the wall. It's just there. I'll include this picture in the post as well.
Is that the white thing we see in the left-hand side of the closet?
If you look all the way, if you look at this picture and you look all the way on the left, you barely see it. It's barely there, but it does.
Yeah.
It sticks out about 14 inches, something like that. But you can remove that cover and, I mean, you actually have full access to the door. Like you can go, if you go straight back, it doesn't bump into it at all. So in theory, whenever we have to pull that HVAC unit out entirely and replace it, because I'm sure that'll happen.
Well, this is just simply the air handler. And typically, what's doing the real work is the compressor unit, which is outside. Your air handler should be okay. I would not worry about replacing it. Do you concur with this, Michael?
Yeah,
but, air handlers basically should be fine. The real workhorse is the compressor unit. Yeah. That's the thing you replace every 12 to 15 years.
That's right. Yeah, you've essentially got a fan in there, which is what you need it replaced, if I recall correctly. And otherwise, it's just a big duct. So,
Sonny, where is your access to the air filter? How are you replacing the air filter on your
Well, if everyone can pull up the visual guide here. It's funny. I'm listening to Joel McHale's audiobook right now because I enjoy listening to celebrities talk about themselves. And he, there are a bunch of pictures in his actual book. So he, like every like 20 minutes or so, he's like, "All right, now pull up the PDF. Look at the pictures that I've taken of the Eiffel Tower."
All right. I know what you're getting at here.
You were going to ask, "Have I been changing the air filter?" The answer to that is no. Yes, that's no, I have not been. So it was disgusting. It was disgusting.
Michael, do you want to do this or do I have to?
No, look, I mean, some people are just so far gone, you can't do it. Look, if anybody in your house is having any kind of indoor allergy problems,
I realized when I saw how dirty it was, I've changed it. It's clean now.
I don't care about allergies. What I care is about saving you money, Sonny.
That's true, too.
When you don't change your filter, you put extra strain on the motor in the air handler.
What is it that just broke? I'm aware of all this.
It broke because you haven't been replacing the filter. Do you know when you replace the filter, Sonny?
Every month.
No. Wrong. Every month.
That's a lot.
Every month.
That's a little excessive. That's a little excessive.
You buy the most expensive filters they make, the Filtrete Merv 39,000s.
No.
And then you replace them every month, no matter what.
Crazy.
Don't listen to the like, oh, you can get 3 months out of this filter. No.
No. You don't need that. I disagree. I object to every month. I think that's a little excessive.
So anyway, I now have a tankless water heater. In theory, I should never run out of hot water ever again. I asked the guy, I was like, "So I could just run this?" He was like, "Yeah, you can run this for 4 straight weeks. It's never gonna run out of hot water." So hot showers, here I come. But I mean, the problem is it's still, the house is still like 80 degrees because I've turned the air conditioner all the way up to 80 degrees. Otherwise, it runs 100% of the time outside. I mean, like, there's no. Because it is so hot in Dallas right now. It's a scorcher out there. But 80 degrees is
Dallas,
80 degrees
so hot
much
right
better
now.
Than 90 degrees is what I'll say. It's much more livable.
Hey.
That was my
you.
It took the guys came out, they removed the water tank in about an hour one morning. That afternoon, the air conditioner guy came out and replaced the motor. And then the next day, or it was the next Monday, so we had to go. We went a full weekend without hot water, which, like, that's a trade I'll take. I'll take air conditioning for no hot water, over a 2-day stretch. Frankly, for the rest of my life, if you had to make me choose, you can either have air conditioning or hot water ever again. I'd be like, I don't know. I was worried about how the dishwasher would hold up without hot water, JVL. But let me tell you, my dishwasher did just fine. Did just clean those dishes. It surprised me as well. I did a little. I will say that I was a little extra conscientious on the rinsing.
I was
going to
say,
but as a dishwasher person, I know you would appreciate that little tidbit. I will say it got so bad on the Thursday night Thursday during the day that I just was like, all right, we're going to a hotel for the night. It was my daughter's birthday. I was like, it's a birthday trip. We're taking a birthday trip to the hotel. We're going to eat out and go play and we'll swim in the pool. And I was like, the reality was
so
like, daddy not sleeping another night in 90 degree heat. Daddy not do it. So, that was fun. Anyway, long story short, I have space in my area that I can now replace the filter every 4 days with the Mervs. And we're all good to go.
I don't think we have had so much conversation in the comments.
Everyone was so horrified by what they saw that they could not help but sympathize.
You know, the Blumhouse could do a whole movie.
about that, where the
elevated horror pitch is the thing the contractor does with the hot water install.
HVAC.
I could see that. I could see that being... It's actually about trauma. The trauma of owning a home.
That's right. That's right. I don't need to see a movie about that. I live that every single day. JVL.
Yeah.
What's going on with you,
my man? I'm trying to think if I have anything that I can talk about, because the stuff we were doing in the green room, we cannot talk about as much as I would like to, because I have a lot of things I'd like to get off my chest. No, I mean, I honestly, I don't really have anything. Here's what I got. G Money wanted to watch G.I. Joe. He's interested in G.I. Joe. And so
the television program from the 80s?
The recent movie starring Channing Tatum and The Rock.
The recent movies.
Recent? Like, that was like 10 years ago.
So I said, you know, actually the second G.I. Joe movie is really good. And it's like, great, can we watch it? I said, well, you know, the truth is you really have to watch the first one in order to understand what's going on. But the problem is the first one is terrible. And it's like, I don't care. I'll sit through the terrible movie. Let's do it. So he put on the first one, and I had forgotten how unbelievably bad it is. I mean, it is such a horror show that it makes sense that when they did a sequel, they basically, the sequel reboots the entire series. It gets rid of everybody who is on the G.I. Joe team. Like, the whole G.I. Joe, all those characters are gone.
Which movie has Rihanna?
Like, start over.
Which movie has Rihanna in it?
Are you thinking of Battleship?
Which one was she in? Oh, she was in Battleship. She was in Battleship. Sorry.
Yeah.
Getting my
right.
She's
idiot.
In toy
she's
based
that's not a toy.
Movies.
That's a board game.
So we, as we're sitting there watching it, G Money is just like, and he looks at me. And he's like, "This might be the greatest movie ever made." And I was like, wow, and you aren't even old enough to start having fantasies.
Yeah, isn't
about
that Sienna
Miller?
Isn't she?
It's Sienna.
Was Joseph Gordon-Levitt Cobra Commander?
Ooh. Joseph Gordon-Levitt was Cobra Commander.
I think
Commander.
That movie may have killed his career. Basically, it was like derailed it.
No, he spends all of his time doing like.
He's in one Christopher Nolan movie.
He's in Dark Knight Rises and Inception.
He made two back to back.
Yeah. But the other Rachel Nichols is in it. I don't know if you guys remember Rachel
big
Nichols.
Big fan of her.
There was
in the movie P2. Look up
P2.
That.
P2. Maybe I should look that up on Daily Motion.
No, not Daily Motion. Just look up the poster for it. Here, I'll effort that while you guys work.
I gotta say, so there was a moment, like there was a Fox show built around her that didn't, they got a pickup, but didn't get out of like the first half season, I don't think.
Oh, sorry.
And,
just saw the P2.
And then she got this in a couple other movies, and then she disappeared. For all I know, she's married to some Saudi prince at this point, you know, just cashed in that way. But my God, what a terrible actress. It's just one of these things where you look and you just think, how did anybody agree to put her on screen?
I have a theory on how she got cast in things, and I just sent it to you via text message.
Okay, I'm listening. Oh, via text message.
Interesting.
Is this
there's a lot? There's a lot
say?
We can't say apparently on this show today.
No, well, this is literally true. Okay,
describe what you're seeing.
Well, hold on.
Should I say this?
Should I not say this? Because this was basically the Penelope Cruz thing. Like she just, you know, like her entire career. Is that she's just got an unbelievable rack. Like, that's it, right? And people were just like, this happens every once in a while in Hollywood. Somebody just, you know, gets because the people who make movies are objectify women and are terrible. And
no.
For reasons we're going to talk about when we get to Barbie.
Save it.
Let's save it for that. Okay,
she's terrible, your point.
She's terrible. Hold on. Let's go back to G.I. Joe here. So G Money liked the first one.
Yes.
Have you guys watched the second one yet?
Has he seen the second one?
Not yet. She went to Columbia. That's fascinating. Rachel Nichols is an Ivy League grad.
I'm surprised.
That's right.
Wikipedia
says she's married to a real estate developer. So
that all scans.
Everything's coming together. All right. She is not good. God, she was in something. She was in something that I really liked, and I forget what. Maybe it was P2, which is a movie that I again mostly.
Well, I'm looking at it.
I'm surprised
she was in Charlie Wilson's War.
Oh, she married Scott Stuber for a while. That's fascinating.
That anyway,
the chairman of Netflix Films.
yeah. Well, I mean,
married him for a hot year.
She probably has like $1 billion in Netflix stock now. She never has to work again.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. All right.
That's what should we? Yeah. Should we move on then? Should we move on to the box office?
What about you?
I think.
Yeah, let's do.
What about Mike Warren?
What?
No, we've done. No,
people love the dudes chatting. Oh my god!
Nobody needs to hear about. Nobody needs to hear about Mike's baseball. Right? Can you move your hand?
Yeah. Every single day, it's gotten better.
It looks swollen right there.
See, everybody, Mike is fine.
It is swollen. It is still.
No, that looks like it's. It looks like it's going the wrong direction.
No. This is so.
Yeah,
much
I don't doubt
that
it's. I don't doubt that it's going to slowly heal improperly. But the broken bone that you have in there is going to snap at one point.
It's not.
You're going to reach down and try and grab one of your children who's falling, and your arm's just going to snap. It's just that hairline fracture is going to give.
It does. It does hurt to pick up the baby.
I can't imagine why.
But that's all I got to say about that. Let's move on. Let's move on to the box office. We've got, I don't know, maybe this is common, but now two weekends, I should say, in a row, the number one and the number two movies are the exact same, and they both had essentially the same drop.
Yeah.
Am I right? Number one at Barbie. Grossing last weekend, $93 million, total $351 million. Number two, Oppenheimer, grossing almost $47 million, and a grand total of $174 million, both dropping about 42-43%. Pretty amazing. Sonny, this is unique, if not unprecedented. This is pretty remarkable.
I mean, it's not insane to see the same movies be first and second a couple weeks in a row. But I will say that this was one stat that I saw tossed around that I think is accurate is that this was the highest grossing final July weekend in box office history. So that's big. Mm. But here's one way to think about this that I haven't even tweeted this. I'm saving it just for you podcast listeners. Before Barbie and Oppenheimer came out, the box office was running about 10% ahead of the year before. It was plus 10% on 2022. And that's, that's good, whatever. It's nice. It shows that, some movies are, but it was definitely a little bit disappointing for, some in the industry who wanted things to be a little bit further ahead. At this point, now at the year to date, mark, it is 20% ahead. So the Barbie and Oppenheimer effect has effectively doubled the rate of improvement, year over year on the box office. And I think that number will continue to stretch, because if you go back and look at the weekends in 2022, you had a bunch of really bad weekends in August and September. And I think we're actually going to have some stuff that might pop and will probably have legs. So, I mean, Barbie, I don't know about that. Barbie and Oppenheimer will continue to play through the rest of the fall. But I also think that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles: Mutant Mayhem is going to do pretty well, because it's a kids movie. There hasn't been much
kids
in theater for kids, and that will play well. And there'll be other little things, horror movies, whatever. I mean, like look, there are several big box office stories that we could look at here. Sound of Freedom continues to do very good business. It's at $150 million. Total, it dropped just 35%. That movie is going to near 200 million. Talk to Me, which is a horror movie from A24, it's a low budget cost. I think they picked it up for $4.5 million at a Sundance.
This is like the Monkey's Paw movie.
The trailer for this movie is you shake a ceramic hand and you say, "Talk to me," and spirits appear, and then they take over your body. Like, that's the big, and then shocker, this goes horribly wrong for all involved. If I were in the movie where everyone was shaking the horror hand, I would simply not shake the horror hand. but I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm not a character in one of these movies. So, so anyway, the so that movie grossed $10 million. Again, A24 picks that up for $4.5 million at Sundance, and it is going to end up being one of the highest grossing A24 films of all time. A small little tangent here. Everybody loves to talk about A24 and how successful they are, and they are. They're a very successful studio. They have had two Best Picture winners. They are critically, they release a lot of critically acclaimed stuff. You know, they have the occasional big hit with something like Everything Everywhere All at Once. But on the main, their movies do not make money, or do not make a great deal of money. At 10.43 million dollars, Talk to Me is now the 20th highest grossing A24 picture of all time domestically. If it gets to 25 million, it will be in the top 10. So I mean, like, this is it's a very niche studio that has an outsized influence in the media world because it's very, very popular in New York and LA. I mean, huge.
It's the HBO
basically
studio.
Basically
right.
I wanted to ask a question about Mission Impossible, because I want to go see Mission Impossible again. And it is very, very hard. At my multiplex, Mission Impossible is down to like one screen twice a day. And I think this is a huge, I mean, if this is real, and this is something that's being replicated and it's getting squeezed on screen counts, it winds up being a gigantic mistake to have released it 2 weeks before the Barbie Oppenheimer. When we had, didn't we have like four fallow weeks before that?
Yeah.
When
yes.
Just a bunch of, like, it could have been Indiana. They were afraid. I guess they were scared off by Indiana Jones. They were scared off by Transformers.
Yeah. So I think they made a mistake by not, in hindsight, they clearly made a mistake by not releasing this after Barbie and Oppenheimer. As like a September, you could put it in, you could slot it into that late September, yeah, early October slot.
Because it's a dead zone. But my guess is that they were thinking, we can't risk being in an actor's strike because we need Tom Cruise.
That may have been part of it. But I think also that I think they just did not. I think nobody thought that Barbie and Oppenheimer were going to be as massive as they were. I mean, those are two enormous, enormous hits that are almost entirely out of left field. I thought Oppenheimer would be lucky to do Dunkirk numbers, and it has rocketed past that. It's already grossed more than that.
Zeitgeist, baby.
It is very, it's very, it's going to do, it's going to end up being his highest grossing non-Batman movie. Think about that. It's going to be higher grossing than Batman Begins. So, I mean, the only Christopher Nolan movies it will probably make less money than, at least domestically, are The Dark Knight and The Dark Knight Rises. So,
yeah.
I don't know. It's wild.
Question. Number three on this past weekend's list is Haunted Mansion. I have many questions about this movie, but my most immediate question is, why is this movie coming out now and not around Halloween?
Great question.
Thank you. It's actually my wife's question.
Your wife is very smart.
From her, yeah, she,
your wife,
well,
is very smart. Is your wife a Hocus Pocus fan? Is she one of these women who loves Hocus Pocus? Because they exist. There are many of them.
Because of our age, we're the same age, she is a fan, but recognizes how crappy it is.
Well, that movie became kind of a cult classic, and it was a similar, like, got released in July by Disney. Just like this movie, which the reason you release a movie like this in July instead of October is because it's not really being sold as a scary movie. It's being sold as a comedy. So the idea is like it's, but like, I don't think, I don't know. The problem with that movie is that it cost $150 million to make. That's where that went wrong. They spent $150 million on a green screen comedy. It just makes no sense.
Where did it go?
I haven't seen it, so I don't know. Maybe you can see every penny on the screen, but.
But didn't they make a Haunted Mansion movie
20
years ago?
They did. And you know how much that movie made? More, not adjusted for inflation, than this one. So,
wow.
Eddie Murphy.
Other Haunted Mansion.
Eddie Murphy. It was an Eddie Murphy.
It was Eddie Murphy.
Is he also in this one?
No. No Eddie.
Who's in this one?
Owen Wilson.
This is like reboot, right? Owen Wilson's in it. This is like, but this is reboot. This is not like continuation.
It's funny. I asked my kids if they wanted to see it because, you know, we've been to Disney World twice in the last couple of years, and we did the Haunted Mansion a couple times on those trips, and They just had no interest. They were like, nah, it looks too scary. So
it looks more adult than the Eddie Murphy one. The Eddie Murphy one was like made at the time when Eddie Murphy was doing
kids, he was making like Flubber and Nutty Professor or not Flubber.
Pluto Nash.
He was in Flubber.
I know, not Flubber.
Dr. Doolittle.
Thank you.
Dr. Doolittle. Right.
Okay. Well, that answers that question. Should we move on? Because we talked about...
Yes, let's get on to the real one.
We talked about Oppenheimer last week, and I imagine some people thought maybe we should have talked about Barbie. So let's talk about Barbie this week. We all saw it. What do we think? Sonny, you want to give us a big boy review of Barbie?
Barbie! Starring Margot Robbie as Barbie. Stereotypical Barbie, as she's called in the movie. Is about a doll that creates, that develops a mental problem when she's played with by an aging older woman who's bitter at the world. And the...
an aging, like, 40-year-old woman. Not an
older
woman.
An elderly woman who should not be on movie screens plays...
Don Lemon over here. With... Just, you know, she just... aren't they past their primes?
This 40-year-old woman who probably is nearing the grave, I would assume, because I never see anybody that old on movie screens anymore. She plays with a doll, and the doll develops a mental problem because, you know, the woman playing with her is crazy. So then the doll has to escape her reality to figure out what's going on in the real world, where she goes and interacts with Will Ferrell. Ken comes along with her, and they kind of figure out what's going on. And when they come back, Ken has taken over Barbie Land and the patriarchy rules. And this is where the movie gets good, because that's when Barbie Land turns into an interesting place, when the Kens take over. Because, as you know, guys, you know, society runs a little bit better. Society runs a little bit better when it's just, you know, guys being guys, dudes being dudes. And then it all collapses. Then it all collapses. The women come back. They take over again. Everything falls apart. At the end of the movie, we learn that what it means to be a real woman is to be a mother and to have children who you can look at and to have lady body parts. That's what it means to be a real woman. Barbie answers the question, what is a woman? I don't know, guys. This movie's not good. It's not. Here's why this movie isn't good. It's not good. That was a very sarcastic reading of the film. The reason this movie isn't good is because it's a comedy, and I never laughed once. I didn't laugh a single time, even though there's some amusing stuff. But it all has to do with the guys on the screen. All of the Kens, kind of funny. Ryan Gosling really commits to the bit. I really enjoy watching him be stereotypical Ken. He's very funny and amusing. Michael Cera as Alan, a.k.a. Gay Ken. Gay Ken's friend. Ken's gay friend. Basically, is very funny as like as the guy who doesn't fit in with the rest of the guys, and also wants to escape Barbie Land as a result. And Will Ferrell as the head of Mattel, which, you know, like, I just enjoy watching Will Ferrell's dumb rubber face. It makes me happy. I like seeing him be in movies and being kind of goofy. But all the stuff, all the like incoherent gender politics of it all, it just. Mind-numbingly bad and boring, doesn't quite work. I don't think it like makes the case it wants to make. And the other problem with this movie is that it is very much at war with itself, because what you have here is a 2-hour toy commercial that calls attention to the fact that it's a 2-hour toy commercial in order to inure itself from criticisms for being a 2-hour toy commercial. And I hate that shit. I hate that shit so much. I like just own what you are. Don't try and gussy it up. Don't call attention to the fact that you're self-aware, that you realize that you're selling a product for Mattel. Like, you're not buying any credit with anyone. You're not buying any credit with me, at least. I hate it. I hate that. I hate that self-aware nonsense. Just be a toy commercial. This is why I prefer Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem, because it's a 2-hour toy commercial that's just telling a story about ridiculous characters having fun with each other that you can probably go to Target today and buy off the shelf. That's what I want to see.
So you think Seth Rogen is funny and Greta Gerwig isn't?
Greta Gerwig and Noah Baumbach. She co-wrote the movie. So there's at least 50% of the blame of this is on a man.
So what listeners can't see is Sonny has several books on the patriarchy on the shelf behind him that he's reading. That's why he's taking
there are little things in the movie that are kind of funny. Like, again, but they all have to do with Ken. Like, for instance,
they do.
His the way Ryan Gosling plays Ken as with the emotional and actual intelligence of a 4-year-old is perfect. Like, when he goes, there's this moment where he's outside of a school library and he says to Barbie, I think, I'm going to go inside and look for books about trucks. Like, that's like a perfect, that's actually a perfect joke. That's actually, that is, that's like, it works because it's like, that is what a child who is discovering himself is like. They're like, I want books about trucks. It's what my 4-year-old boy is like. That works. But like, just so much of it that just doesn't work.
So I have a view that is close to Sonny's. So I'm wondering if I should continue or should we let JVL, who I believe liked this movie, talk, and then I can share my stupid thoughts.
I mean, I
thoughts.
Wouldn't say I liked it. I fucking loved it. It was...
Tell us.
It's great. But no, you should... I will rebut. I will rebut.
Okay.
You add your thoughts.
Because I share Sonny's view on this as a comedy that does not actually deliver any comedy or any laughs. I mean, the
sorry, I'm sorry. I'm going to interrupt you. I laughed out loud, doubled over my seat almost throughout the movie. Certainly after the first 30 minutes, just constant guffawing. I was afraid that the women sitting next to me, who were, you know, very much enjoying it, were going to get freaked out by how funny I thought the whole thing was. But go ahead.
Yeah. I would have been freaked out too, because it wasn't funny at all. I mean, so like, I'll give you a perfect example.
At all?
I'll give you a perfect example. Yes. I'll give you a great example. Like, what was funny about it, what was humorous about it, were like situations or sort of characterizations, but that didn't actually go anywhere in terms of jokes. So for instance, the joke about, which was, I believe, in one of the trailers, about the beach off, right? Like, so there's a whole thing where Ken and another Ken,
Simu Liu's
Ken, are arguing with each other. And they challenge each other, or one challenges the other to a beach off, whatever that is, essentially, whatever. It's not important. The important thing is the joke is that it sounds like, you know, I'll beat you off.
Like masturbation.
Which, okay. Oh, is that what that means?
It's funny.
So
it's
like,
funny
that's,
because
okay,
it's
that's
funny,
funny
because it's a double entendre.
But then it continues, and the structure of it completely falls apart, because then they keep saying versions of beach off that don't sound like beat you off, and it keeps going, and the joke completely falls apart because it doesn't sound like the funny thing anymore. Now it's just they're saying variations of, oh, we'll beach off together. Well, that doesn't really sound like it. Anything. So like
it sounds like beat off together.
It ran the joke into the ground and sort of like presented the idea and didn't do anything
laughing.
With it. I was not laughing. I did not think it was funny. I thought it was as Pert Happily on Parks and Recreation says, it had the cadence of a joke, but it didn't make me laugh. It didn't go anywhere. And I think it suffers from the fact that, as far as I could tell, there weren't any actual comedy writers who wrote this. Right, this was Noah Baumbach and Greta Gerwig who wrote it, and like they're good and able, and even so, I loved Lady Bird, for instance. Like they can write movies, they just can't write jokes. And this is a movie that seemed to want to be both absurd and kind of like small movie serious, and the tonal shifts like. Just, I was bored the whole time because like, I was like, every time I was expecting it to like, for instance, the Will Ferrell stuff, like once you see that the real world is also absurd, right? Because Mattel's like the boardroom, like they're all like men who all kind of dress the same.
The cubicle.
Yeah. That like, right. So there's like a Brazil aspect to it. There's like an absurdity to it. But it's like the world is only absurd in the Mattel building, and yeah. everything else around it is like serious. And I that grated against me, because I thought it was going to start heightening things. And every time it started to get kind of higher and more absurd, then it brought it back down to this like weepy kind of cry. Like it just, so the tonal shift didn't work. So then I just kind of folded my arms. It was like, okay, well, I'll just have to ride this out.
Wow, you just furrowed
so
your
you
brow.
You sat there in an auditorium with 300 laughing women having the time of their lives, and you folded your arm and what, did the hobbit, the mean hobbit face. You remember him from Fellowship of the Ring?
Odo Proudfoot. So, no, but here's the other thing, JVL. Very little laughter in my extremely full theater. And they were in there, and it was a lot of people who were ready to see Barbie. They were in their pink, they were whatever. And like, it was kind of weird how quiet it was.
It killed at my theater.
Not a funny movie.
Well, absolutely killed.
I will just say,
one of the only times I've ever been in a theater where in the middle of the movie, people started yelling and cheering. And then at the end of the movie, people applauded.
What?
Like the credits roll and this 300-seat auditorium, people applaud. My crowd was into it, dude.
Can I say one thing before you make your rebuttal, JVL, which is I recognize that this movie like doesn't have anything for me, right? Like
Sure, if you don't like fun and you don't like to laugh and enjoy life, it has nothing in it for you.
You'll have your time, JVL. You'll have your time. Like I did not have sisters. I do not have daughters. Like Barbie was like not a part of my life. But the thing that I was able to recognize that I thought would have worked had they leaned into it more was I thought the references to Barbie stuff, to the different outfits, to the different sets. Like there's this whole joke about Midge, Barbie's friend who's pregnant. And like, that's weird. Like my wife had the Barbie wedding set, which was Midge getting married. And Barbie is a bridesmaid, and Skipper is there as the flower girl. Anyway,
she
explained
Midge
all this to me.
When she was getting married?
Midge was not pregnant. No. This was later. Midge got pregnant later.
Did she come with like a little
shotgun? The father of the bride
up,
is shotgun.
You puff her up after the ceremony, like boop.
Apparently, there was the puberty Barbie or puberty Skipper. Anyway, but like I thought, if they had leaned into that a little more directly and made it a kind of like, hey, remember all of this wacky Barbie stuff? I could have seen it working a little more, but they had to make it into this, into a message movie.
One of the problems with
it didn't need to be.
One of the problems with this movie is that it doesn't actually, it sets up this conflict between Barbie and the Mattel suits. That just never pays.
Yeah, it doesn't
off.
Go anywhere. But it doesn't.
It just never pays off anywhere.
It drops that.
The Mattel people just disappear from totally the whole last act of the movie. And then it's totally like, true. Oh yeah. And then it's like sad montage and people in the theater crying. And I'm just like, you people are all being manipulated. You're being manipulated by the movies. No.
They're very emotional, Sonny.
I didn't say that. That was JVL.
I disavow. Okay. All right. I'm done for now. JVL, sell us on Barbie as the greatest movie since, I don't know.
Since Mission Impossible. Dead Reckoning, Part 1. I would, as a brief aside, this has nothing to do with anything. As Will Ferrell has aged, I feel like he really has, his face has morphed into George W. Bush's face. It's as if portraying him on Saturday Night Live, doing that bit, infected him so deeply at like a cellular level that he has started his features are starting to look like W. I don't know if that struck you guys as you were watching it. Okay. I did not go into this movie with expectations. I really did not like the first 15 minutes of it or so. And I was in the process of going to hate it. Because I just was, you know, we're getting beat over and over the head with just, you know, messagey stuff. And the minute she being Barbie stops their big dance number by saying, does anybody else think about dying or whatever? From there, the movie just sort of switches into a different gear. And I'm struggling with how to explain this. But for me, the movie was simultaneously heavy-handed, but with this incredibly light touch, where it was, you know, like, it's every piece of, like, wokeness, from white savior Barbie to whatever is there, and yet with, like, a wink of, like, yeah, this is kind of ridiculous. And it was just funny. And, you know, to say, like, well, sure, but all the funny stuff was Ken. Ken is half the movie. Ryan Gosling gets second billing. Like, I don't think you can just say, well, I mean, Ken is, Barbie is the straight man for this movie, right? Ken is the comic force of the movie. That's how it's engineered to be. And all the Ken stuff is very well done and very well written. And the Barbie part is really written as the centerpiece that everything else turns around, and they managed to create an arc for her, which is, like, you know, weirdly emotionally satisfying. And at the end, it pivots into, so Sonny, you say that the politics of the movie are incoherent, and that's true to a certain extent, but also life is incoherent, because what it pivots into is, it pivots from, like, look how hard it is to be a woman, into look how hard it is to be alive, right? That life is hard. There aren't any villains in the movie. The villain is real life. And that is, like, just a true thing. It is hard to be a woman, and for lots of different reasons, it is hard to be a man. And all of the stuff about, like, you know, finding purpose in life, about parenthood is kind of true for both men and women, right? I mean, all of those, the things at the end where, you know, which we take as you know, cis heteronormative subversive messages are frankly just true for everybody and is part of the human experience, right? This is, and I don't know. If you didn't laugh at the gigantic battle scene on the beach, which then morphs into a gigantic dance scene.
No, that was actually the point where I thought, okay, Ken's not even funny anymore.
Yeah, no, that was,
like,
that was
like, when it got into the I was like, part. What am I watching? I didn't like what I was watching. I was just like, this is nothing to me. I might as well be watching.
It was a musical, a musical
TV
suck.
Commercial.
I couldn't stop laughing. I loved it so much. Loved everything about it. Who is the America Ferrera's daughter? Was she in the Dumb Shazam movie, the Dumb Shazam sequel we just saw?
Oh, you're thinking of Rachel Zegler?
Oh, is that she's not, this girl wasn't it. Rachel Zegler? Yeah. Okay. Anyway, I thought to myself, I get why this movie has connected and is a cultural sensation. And because the truth is, there is something for everybody in it. And it is fun, and it is humanistic, and it is big hearted, and it understands both men and women. And it understands how hard life can be. And I just fucking loved it.
I will say,
I'm sorry.
Here's
go ahead.
I will not dispute that this movie has landed for people, that for women in particular. I've been getting lots of angry notices from readers of the female persuasion who were not happy with my review or my Across the Movie Aisle review. Hopefully they don't listen to this, because I don't need that baggage. One of the comments I think kind of summarized it very well, which this very nice lady said, "Shut the fuck up, you idiot. This movie made me feel things, and I don't care if you didn't laugh in it." And I was like, you know what? That's actually a fair. She didn't put it exactly that way, but that's more or less what she was saying. And, like, that's a fair response. Look, this movie is not for me. It's not for me. This movie is for, very specifically, women between the age of, like, 20 and 60 who need to be reassured that it's okay for their daughters to play with Barbie. That's who this movie is for. This movie is for Mattel to sell dolls to old women who have been told for the last 40 years that Barbie is bad and nobody should play with Barbie because it's bad for people's self-images and whatever.
It's the Lego movie in that sense. But on the other hand, even though there's nothing in it for you, in the same way there's nothing in the Lego movie for, like, grown-ups, like, the grown-ups are not the intended audience for the Lego movie, there is enough in the Lego movie for grown-ups to enjoy it and take things from it. And I feel the same way about Barbie. The Barbie movie is not for me. And yet I was able to sit there and have a fantastic time. and laugh and feel good about life and, you know, and also be kind of touched that all these ladies around me were having the time of their lives.
I
thought it was great.
I'm not going to put myself in their shoes. I'm not going to put myself in their heads. I'm not going to empathize with them.
Comedy is comedy. I just can't believe that you guys didn't like, because again, I have not laughed out loud in a movie theater this much in a long ass time. I was struggling to remember the last time that I was guffawing and belly laughs at a movie theater.
I mean, it's all subjective, right? Like what you think is funny. If you laugh, like it's an involuntary action. It just didn't do it for me. And can I also say that I felt personally attacked in the Matchbox 20 scene of this movie, because I was
so funny. You were that guy on the guitar.
I was singing every line. I was like, oh yeah, this, I haven't listened to this song in like 15 years. I love this song. I wanna push you around,
the Indigo Girls.
I will.
Seeing closer. Come on, how funny is that?
That's not funny. It's a song.
It's not funny.
As anybody who, you're too young for this, but this
I knew the Indigo Girls. I knew of them. They were in Atlanta, is where I'm from, and like it was a big thing.
The only humor in this movie that worked for me was any humor that involved people making funny faces. Kate McKinnon, the funniest of the Barbies by far, because her face is funny. I enjoy her face, and it I like it when she mugs for the camera. Ryan Gosling, very funny with his many looks and his kind of like childlike glee. Will Ferrell, again, rubber-faced Will Ferrell. I love seeing him on camera. Any movie that relies on funny faces to score laughs has failed on the humor level. It just does not work. There's no, the jokes are all bad. My job
Couldn't
is beach.
Disagree with you more.
My job is beach. It's like the one line I remember from that movie that is like, oh, that's kind of funny.
I couldn't disagree with you more, man. I loved it. It's got something for everyone. I will say I was confused. There were a bunch of like, you know, 9, 10, 11, 12-year-old girls in the theater. It's not like inappropriate for them, but I did wonder, like, what are they getting out of this? Because as you say, this really is for like young women. Like even like 17, even college age girls. I wonder like how much
this is not for young women. This is for middle aged women. This is for the America Ferreras, the dying, older,
the millennials, elder millennials
set. those people.
I think my mother in law is going to love it. I can't wait for. I came out of it, and the first thing I did was text my wife and my mother in law and say, "You two have to go see this together. You're going to have the best time."
Can I ask a maybe foolish question again? No sisters, no daughters. I had no idea really that Barbie was actually that problematic, like in terms of the way, like, I understand sort of on a surface level, but I mean, it was like, did people really have all these hang-ups about Barbie?
Michael,
really?
As Alyssa Rosenberg said on Across the Movie Aisle this week.
Good podcast.
She went and did a dive into this literature, the academic literature on problematic Barbie, and it's all bullshit.
Yeah. It's like
three studies that were done with, like, the truth is there is nothing problematic with Barbie.
She's like in ways progressive.
Does not make
this is what the movie is simultaneously saying and making fun of, right? The idea that like we have made Barbies be lawyers, so now there's no more inequality in the world. And like I this is one of the things I just resent about the movie, is that like it wants to have it both ways all the time, and it's very frustrating.
Did you resent? So here's the thing, and I agree. As I said, very heavy handed in that way, and yet I think it succeeds in both having its cake and eating it too. Like it is trying to have it both ways, and I think it works. It succeeds in having it both ways. In the same way that, again, like the Lego movie succeeds, although I would say this succeeds at a much, much higher level.
The Lego movie is so much better than the Lego movie is like actually telling a story, at least. There's like
heavy handed and light touch.
Well, there is very little plot in the Barbie movie. Like in terms of things happening, like nothing actually happens.
It's a character study.
Yeah,
there are no villains. The villain is life.
But see, right. I don't like movies like that. Like,
the best movies are like that.
I know you like movies like that, JVL. So it all kind of makes sense. But like, I like a good guy and a bad guy in my movies because
it's like Encanto.
This movie has a bad guy. The bad guy's Barbie. She destroys her. She destroys her whole
which
world.
Which Sonny is just going full troll.
She destroys.
Which Sonny's just trolling.
She destroys her world by leaving it, trying to better herself.
No, yeah. I look even the you know so having Helen Mirren pop in with the breaking the fourth wall note to filmmakers. Whatever you do, don't cast Margot Robbie in the
to
role.
To make this point.
Right. Is, again, ways in which heavy-handed, but executed with such a light touch. I was like, yeah, you know what? I'm here. I'm along for the ride. This works for me.
So
I understand that this is cloying. I understand all of those things, and yet it plays.
So here's a mutual friend of ours, whose name I won't mention, had seen this movie before I did, and this person's characterization was there's a lot of the Zaz sensibility, meaning, you know, Zucker Abrams, Zucker sensibility to this movie. So when I went in to see the movie and it was not like Airplane or Naked Gun, I was very disappointed. So maybe I'm a little colored by that high expectation.
Did either of
your wives see this?
No, my wife has not seen it yet. I want her to go see it because I want her to tell
me how
wrong I am.
Do you think she's going to enjoy it?
I think she will. I think she'll probably like it more than I did. And
how
I
about
want
you, Michael?
I want her to see it and to yell at me about how I'm wrong.
I don't know if my wife loved my wife liked Oppenheimer much more than I did. So who knows?
How is that even possible?
Well, she's
because I didn't. No, but I think because
unlike
I actually didn't
Mike,
like it as. I didn't like it as much as Sonny did, and
it's
not my favorite Nolan film.
I didn't say it has to be your favorite Nolan film. You just have to, you know, acknowledge that it's great. Both of you. You too, JBL. Acknowledge that it's great.
It's fine.
It is great.
You like Barbie more than Oppenheimer, somehow.
I mean, by a lot, yeah.
That's ridiculous.
That is ridiculous.
That's a ridiculous thing to
I'm
say.
Sorry.
You shouldn't even joke about things like that.
I believe the market has spoken. More people have seen Barbie than Oppenheimer. According to the Bunch thesis, that means that Barbie is the better movie.
Yeah, but that also means the Super Mario Brothers is better than both of them, which is probably true, frankly.
Only for now.
Will Barbie's
going to outgross Super Mario
domestically. I think it will be close. I mean, it just depends on what sort of legs it continues to have. If it plays like... I mean, I'm on the record as saying that I think it could do anywhere between 600 and 700 million. So if it does that, it'll blow past Super Mario Brothers. I don't know. I mean, maybe. Well, no, because Marvel's doesn't come out until like November. I'm curious to see how that movie does, frankly, because that's another girl power. We're gonna get ladies out to the theaters. Movie.
I mean,
it's a lady movie, is what you're saying.
Maybe
yeah,
that'll
so
work.
It's
it looks
bad.
So bad.
It looks really the trailer, which I had not
worse
seen.
Worse than Blue Beetle?
Yeah.
Not worse than Blue Beetle, but almost as it looks in the same zip code as Blue
yes.
Beetle.
Absolutely. Yeah. Had the same thought.
Yeah.
Same thought.
All right. Well, what are we going to do on the bonus? Are we going to do a Mattel draft?
I'm ready for a Mattel draft.
We're going to do a Mattel draft.
So definitely
the Mattel cinematic universe. It's coming.
Exactly.
You.
And this is the bonus episodes. Of course, you cannot access unless you are a patron. So join us at subbeacon.com. Anything else to say about Barbie before we go, guys?
It's great. If you love life, you enjoy the world we live in.
Who enjoys life?
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Yeah. What is this? Mm-mm, mm-mm.
I rest my case.
Okay, then. All right. Well, that's all the time we're giving this episode. Remember, subbeacon.com. Check us out there, and we'll see you next time. I have an outtake.
Before we get to that, I would say also, maybe this will color my things, but there was a short-lived series isn't even really the right thing. There was a collection of animated shorts called Barbie Life in the Dream House that
yes.
Mattel put out some time ago, which were a similar kind of deconstruction of the Barbieverse, and were... The best way I could explain it is imagine if somebody did Arrested Development about Barbie as a cartoon, but kind of geared towards kids. And it was so good and so funny. I love the crap out of Barbie Life in the Dream House. I don't know where it exists anymore. I doubt it's on Netflix anymore. But, you know, go check that out. It is also very fun.
Yeah.
There. All right, well, Michael.
Have any of you seen The Theory, which is so dumb, but I feel like we should mention it, that Will Ferrell's Mattel CEO is the same character as his character at the end of the Lego movie?
Lord Business?
Yes.
Oh, you mean he is the dad in the Lego movie is the Mattel CEO?
Yes. That is all I know.
I had actually thought something similar myself, but I know. I mean, there's no connective tissue, except for the fact that it's the same actor.
That's right. And it's like the toy thing and you know, that somehow he's like a toy collector, and that indicates that he works for a toy company.
This is like the end of the Transformers movie, flipping over the business card that says G.I. Joe.
Yes, exactly.
I hated that so much.
I believe there was a moment when Mattel investigated buying the Lego group.
Because they had Mega Bloks. Right. Which are a total ripoff of, maybe we'll get into this in the bonus episode.
Oh, Duplo, right? A ripoff of Duplo?
Yes, and Lego for that matter. Yeah. Anyway, so, okay, so you guys don't buy it. I don't actually buy it.
I just think it's
kind of hilarious. Oh, okay. Well,
I don't buy it, but I'm open to it and I like it.
Prove us wrong, kids. Prove us wrong. I don't know.
Exactly. I don't know.
I'm sure it's fine.